Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. Hope you're having a wonderful day. You're listening to or watching Service Business Mastery Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Hirsch Blissett, sitting next to my co-host, Josh Crouch. And it's been a while since we've been live on here, partially because over the last winter and fall period of time, we recorded a ton of episodes so that we could have them pre-recorded and ready to be released. And we did that so successfully that we've got episodes ready to be released all the way through November of this year. But there's times where we have really amazing guests and people that we meet. We actually met Rick in
Atlanta. Where were we at?
Atlanta. Yeah. AHR. I knew where it was, AHR. I just couldn't remember if it was Atlanta or Vegas. But
too many different events, too many cities.
We did. Yeah. But we met there and developed a relationship and a friendship. And we were like, you know what? We can't wait until December to have Carol and Rick on the show. So we wanted to have them on. And also we had a short hiatus because I had a neck surgery and had a disc replacement. And then right before I did the disc replacement, I broke my hand. And I'd estimate that I've probably been in, I don't know, 500 attics, 600 attics in my career. And I've never fallen through an attic before. And I was in my attic and was standing on a ceiling, a rafter, and slid down it and just fell. Well, I actually fell on my hand, and then my body fell on the hand, and then I was good. And then my foot slips off the rafter and then goes right through the sheetrock. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, this has never happened. I'm gonna do it at my house. That hand broke the week before my neck surgery, so I couldn't take any pain meds or anything like that because I couldn't have that stuff in my system. So that was kind of a wild period of time, but we're back. And
it's been a hot mess for a minute.
I have been a hot mess for a minute here. Recovery is going good. I've actually been out in the field a lot here the past week or two, checking up on guys and helping out where I can. But that's a little bit about me. Josh has just been busy doing amazing things in the marketing world.
Trying to, man, just get better every day. It's great running. It's always great running, especially for me, like running into people like Rick and Carol. They bring a whole different insight because Carol has been a data scientist for a number of years, which I'll let her introduce herself, but just a whole different perspective on things where, you know, I was in the trades and then went into marketing, different perspective. And then you have people that worked in marketing for the last 15 years. They've seen all the changes Google's made and all this stuff. And they have a whole, it's always good to surround yourself with people that don't follow just the path that you follow people that have different paths, because it opens your mind to different things. And I've had some really good conversations with them that I think I've actually had, I have to respond to an email to try to set up a time to talk a little more in detail with Carol and Rick, but I've been a little busy myself.
So if there's one thing that I could say that I don't like, the one of the changes that I don't like is the fact that GMB is such a pain now. Like, I don't know if
it's a lot harder to manage because, well, and so for us, we don't really, we have to do a few things on the actual listing itself. Like, we use tools now because it always goes back to the search page. And then you have all those options. It's a lot of fun.
It's such a pain to get to what I want.
Like, you have two listings. I think you have two listings, right?
Yeah. So I have two.
Two listings. Now you got to go back. You can't just. It's
very difficult to get from one listing to the other. And I'm like having to sign out of accounts and log into different. I'm like, man, this is ridiculous. But anyways, before we get started with the episode, though, huge shout out to the people who make these episodes possible. UpFrog. Hey Joe, I'm glad to be back too. UpFrog, we had them on the show a couple of weeks ago, a month or so ago, we did something right before the episode went live and sent out a retargeting ad, and we got great response from it. We're still getting residual responses from that initial offer of that tune-up special that the text messages.
That's just talking to your existing it's talking to people who already know, like, and trust you. And I think UpFrog's done a really good job. I actually got a chance to hang out with Justin last week. He was in Mesa. He was visiting a client and got a chance to go to dinner with him. And just like I said, surround yourself with people who think differently than you, because there's just so many opportunities out there. Mm-hmm. And if you're always putting yourself in if you're pigeonholing yourself into this one little, like, this is the only way type of thing, it's not the truth. There's so many different ways to go to market and stuff like that. And he's another example. They do things a little differently. Online pricing, they definitely focus on the rehashing and following up with existing customers, and they use a lot of automation to do so.
Yeah. Which that's, I mean, that's right up our alley. We nerd out with the automation, anything we can automate. Next up, Sarah. I'm actually onboarding with Sarah right now. Finally, they've been a sponsor of the show for over a year. And we're finally finished with our contract with our old CRM, and we're onboarding with Sarah. So I'm super excited to share that that journey that we'll
be having Billy on very soon. He's got some really big updates. There's things that we can't share ourselves that he's going to share.
Yeah.
But they're doing some really cool stuff and really heating up the CRM race, if you will.
Super exciting. All of that's really exciting. Emerson, if you don't know who Emerson is, you're probably not in the HVAC world. They are very, they're very big in the HVAC world. They do a lot of other things as well, but, any HVAC system that you touch has Emerson parts in it, I would pretty much guarantee. But they've reached out, and they have a lot of training programs that their initiative this year is to really grow the training aspects of things. And we're super excited to share more about their trainings and everything as the year progresses on.
Well, I think what's cool is they'll actually help you reach out to local tech schools, and they'll help you with some curriculum stuff, because sometimes that's the hardest thing, right? Like, we don't know, like, we want to do something in our local market, we just don't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. And they made it very clear that they will absolutely help you do that and reach out to local tech schools and help you with curriculum and all of those things. So we're great to have them on as a partner, because one of the biggest, I mean, how many episodes, Tersh, do you think you've had where we're talking about labor force
training and the lack of
and growing technicians and lack of qualified techs. It's like, I feel like every four episodes, we have one episode that's talking about something in that realm.
Yep, 100%. And last but not least, Company Cam. I actually use Company Cam with our business. And it's really cool because you don't have to worry about all these pictures being on your technicians' phones and iPads and clogging up iPads. And at one point, we were having to buy larger iPads because of all of the images that were being stored. They'd run out of data and storage capacity on the iPad. So it's really cool to have that and to have the overlays too. So whenever we're doing a system replacement, we can do a before picture and an after picture, and they're like exactly the same, and it doesn't look all real goofy. The storage of photos is a major headache. If you're trying to use like Google Drive or Google Photos, it can be a really pain. So
take it from marketing company. We've invested heavily in a system that's different than our company Cam, but it was a sizable investment for us to be able to manage and store photos and edit them and do it in a way that notified team members to do tasks and stuff. So Company Cam does a great job for that at the kind of like the retail level for contractors.
Exactly. Cool. Josh, you got anything else you want to add before we get started?
Let's get going.
Cool. I really appreciate y'all hanging out with us and being here, even though we've been on a hiatus for a couple of months. But with that being said, let's get started with the show.
Are you looking for valuable business advice to reach that seven-figure revenue mark? Do you want actionable tips to properly navigate through every business challenge you encounter along the way? Let Tersh Blissett and Josh Crouch be your guide in getting you to the top here at Service Business Mastery. Tune in as they sit down with world-renowned authors in business, leadership, and personal growth who share valuable insights about management, marketing, pricing, human resources, and so much more. Let their nuggets of wisdom gold guide you in owning a thriving, profitable, and ever-growing business. Here are your hosts, Tersh and Josh.
Hey, Carol and Rick, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hey.
Thanks for having us, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you don't mind, Carol, would you mind going first to introduce yourself, a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've been in technology for years. I worked in the state of California for quite a while. I was the director of e-services for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. E-services was responsible for all things CA.gov. So about 400 agencies, websites, 4 million pages, big time of transition. The social media was just being introduced at that time. And so I also led the Innovation Council for Governor that involved connecting with startups. The Google was a startup at the time, YouTube, MySpace, even Twitter, Facebook. And we were talking about how to use those new tools and those new approaches for the delivery of government services. Went on from there. I've been the chief information officer for the California Public Utilities Commission for a couple of years, other major organizations, and then just sort of found my way back to what I really love, which is data. I, after leaving state service, I decided that I was going to finish what I had started at Harvard and went back to study, but the program was not there anymore. It was around emerging technologies and it was the social media and that sort of things. And by the time I got back around, they'd emerged, they were here. So the admissions office said, well, you know, you're not that far away from digital marketing if you don't mind focusing on data. So I'm in. So that's what I did. Went back to Harvard, studied marketing there with an emphasis in the data science side of it. Actually lived in the dorms, which was an interesting experience. Yeah. Lots of stories around that one.
Yeah, she joined two sororities, guys.
Yo, stop. I joined no sororities. I did, though, get a kind of a fun opportunity that, you know, so you make the best out of whatever is happening at the time. And I, at my age, as you can imagine, Fridays and Saturday nights, culturally, I was a little bit different and had a little bit different come from than my counterparts in the dorm.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I had a couple of options. I could yell and scream and have everybody hate me. I could be the dorm mom or I could find something else to do. Mm-hmm. And what I found to do was work in the data science lab, the natural language processing lab, where they were testing some features of Watson that hadn't been released yet. They're out now. But I got to work in cultural resonance analysis, which is what words mean to us culturally rather than what they mean by definition.
Yeah.
So an example is if I were to say, that's cool, it doesn't mean that's cold. Could right. mean that's just really, that's cool, you know, or I could say that's cold and it also doesn't mean that's cold.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so it's, you talk about like natural language processing stuff because we use some tools for outbound messaging and I relate it to like two-dimensional conversations because a lot of times you take the reply, like if it's yes, it goes down this workflow, you know, it goes this way. But the problem is the human language is so broad. Some people, if you ask them if they would recommend you, they say, I would never not recommend your company, right? Two negatives. And you're like, so it sends a negative reply. And now you're right. Like, now I look like an idiot. Now they can tell it's automation, right? And they get the reply and they're like, didn't you read my last message? Like, but it's that there's with AI and all of these things that are coming, like, understanding the human language is getting better and better and better. So you can put in weird things like that and it actually understands what you're saying versus these two-dimensional conversations that marketers have had to use for a while now to try to put automation in place.
Yeah, and that it's really here. It's not just coming, it's here.
No, it's definitely.
It's changed the way that we need to think about our websites. It's changed the way we think about keywords. They're now phrases that can be interpreted. So there's a whole change in dynamic just in the last few years.
So
this is space that we really work in, but we should introduce Rick before I keep talking.
Yeah, I will ask you this and Rick, you can answer this too, unless it's more of Carol's forte, sure. But when it comes to keywords, do we throw out the old keywords that we used to use? Like, you know, AC repair or AC replacement. I mean, are we getting rid of those and now we're focusing on the long form or the long tail keywords. And then whenever we're doing that, should we be our blog posts dead or like, do we do podcasts? Do we
right.
these conversations that are transcribed on our website and that's what gets searched.
Well, so there's a like a 5-hour conversation. But the long and the short of it is the keywords themselves are not dead, but the way you think about them is. So it used to be there were keywords that you could go in and see these things are all scoring really high. And so I'm going to put my website with these keywords.
Yeah.
Now, the natural language processing is actually reading and interpreting your website. And if you have sentence structure that doesn't make sense, or if you have content that looks like it was just jammed in there for the sake of keywords, you will score lower even if you have more of those keywords on your website. So it's all about sounding more like a human, speaking more like a human, providing information like a human, rather than like the search engine. It used to be the search engine would go through and it was a big database and it would fire based upon seeing different words in that database. And now it's not it. It's an interpretive activity that started back in, I think it was 2000 when they first started making the shift. And then that wasn't a really big one, but it was enough to make a little bit of a difference. And then come up to 2020 with the release of BERT, changed everything in Google. Mm-hmm. And then that started the AI race, which we can talk a little bit about later. But really the way that we approach websites has to be different because the way the search engines and the keyword scoring and all that approaches us, approaches those same websites is different.
Well, that's a good jumping off point. There's a lot to unpack there, but let's, before we're 16 minutes in and Rick, you've just been smiling and nodding. No,
that's what I'm here for.
Who are you?
Who am I? Yeah. Well, thanks for having us, guys. It was great to meet you all in Atlanta, right? That's where we met.
Yep.
At AHR. And I think I've been stalking you, Josh, maybe Tersh too, on Instagram prior to that. But
you know, I think I told you this.
Yeah.
I don't check Instagram hardly.
Right. Right.
You get a lot of those messages like, oh, I can help you get 1,000 followers. Yeah. And like, whatever. But I saw this market storm and you sent me a message, I think, when you were in Atlanta. And I just so happened to go to HVAC Uncensored the night before, which was all these Instagram influencers. I'm like, okay, I need to get back on Instagram. So I'm starting back on Instagram. I'm like, oh, there's a message from this guy and it actually seems legit. And then Tersh is like, hey, you got to meet this guy. And I'm like, are you from Market Storm? Like the guy that just messaged me? So it just seemed, to be honest, it did seem a little stalkerish.
Yeah. Actually, when I was talking to Tersh, I didn't put two and two together. And then you're like relentless. And I'm like, oh, I do. I just sent you a note or something. So
yeah, anyways, you said that you're like, wait a minute. I think I just messaged him. And I was like, well, here he is. So you can talk to him.
I remember I liked the name of your company. I thought it was pretty cool. So real quick, my name is Rick Brown. Carol and I started this company back about 5 years ago. Prior to that, I worked in the NFL and the NBA, doing kind of corporate development deals. Had a minor role in what you might call a product launch. I helped launch a soccer team in the Sacramento area called the Sac Republic back in 2014. We met and started Market Storm, and it's sort of taken over my life and been a very exciting ride. So there's my story.
That's awesome. Well, it's great to have you on here. Tersh, I actually did want to get back into Carol's thing about website because you asked about blog posts.
Yeah. So do we keep making blog posts or do we do podcasts and then just transcribe those or?
Well, if you're you make podcasts and you turn it into content that you put on your website, but you have to make it content for your business. Like there's been a boom. I mean, Tersh, you and I have talked about this. There's been a boom in like local business podcasts.
Yeah.
Which has been, I think, is a really great marketing strategy because not getting into like the weeds, but like local backlinks, local, plus, you know, if you know all the business owners, the ones who have all these employees and meet with all these customers in your local market, you're going to create some really goodwill for yourself. And you're interviewing them. So you give them a platform to talk about. So they tell other people, their friends, their family, hey, listen to this podcast that I was on, right? Because it's like a cool deal. It's like being on the radio or TV. It's like, hey, this is cool. I'm on a podcast.
Right.
Where a lot of these businesses don't have that opportunity. So I think if you're interested in doing something like that, it's absolutely something you should do. Just know it's a lot of work. it's like a second full-time job.
Yeah.
At least until the point you can hire some people to help you out. But blog posts, I I definitely don't think are dead. I think you have to think about what the customer is going to ask for. Because think about it, like if we go to Bing Chat, I think that's what they call it, Bing Chat.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to talk about Google's. Google's is a mess right now. But Bing Chat, the way people ask questions, like they may not ask quite, like if they're at the bottom of the funnel, which is what everyone goes after, right? AC repair, they're still going to Google. They're still going to go to Maps or LSA or something, or mm-hmm. pay-per-click or something like that. But if they're up in the middle of the funnel or they're in the top of the funnel, they're going to be searching different things. They're going to be searching like, how do I know I need to replace my air conditioner? How do I find a good contractor?
Mm-hmm. How do you get those questions though? Like, how do I, as a contractor, say, well, this is the question that people are actually asking? Because, everybody in their own industry understands, hopefully understands that there's industry jargon, and where most of us are guilty of using that jargon. Whereas before I got into the HVAC world, I didn't know what HVAC was. Like, I didn't even know what a condensing unit was. I have no idea what any of that stuff was. And mm-hmm. so for me to say those terms, I lose clients, or I lose mm-hmm. like customers. Yeah. And so how do we even know the right questions to be answering?
So this is where you can start listening to the conversations that your CSRs have with people who call in, but not from the perspective of, are the CSRs doing a good job, but what are those people saying? How are they describing what the problem is? How are they thinking about whatever it is they need to have done? And then when your guys go out, ask the people, how long have you been thinking about this? What was the first thing you noticed? And so you've got the opportunity to collect a lot of intel, and all of those things are the things that are at that upper level at the funnel that you can use to start bringing people in.
Can I add to that too? I think when you hear from what they're saying to the CSRs on the phone line through call rail, whatever systems you use, you can utilize some of that language in your ads. And so when you drop ads out, it should sound like, you know, that customer asking that question to your technician or your CSR. So that stuff will trigger to the consumer that they know what they're getting into.
Yeah, I think getting insight from your team, like if you have a salesperson who does all the sales calls, like they get asked the most questions, right? Mm-hmm. And these questions are generally a little higher up on the funnel because these people don't know what they want to do yet. Right. They're not at the decision-making stage. They're somewhere between, I know I need to do something and I need to find out who that person is or who I'm going to hire. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are definitely tools out there to help you with frequently asked questions. Google's got a lot of Chrome extensions that you can literally probably just go to Google Chrome extension store and type in some sort of like people also ask question type thing. I use one called SEO Minion, which you literally can go like 9 layers deep. It'll give you like thousands of questions. If I type in one keyword, it'll give me thousands of questions. And wow. you can put it into a massive data set and then do whatever you want with it. But there's a lot of, Google does give you a lot of that stuff. If you actually just look at, instead of just looking for you what you want, or like, oh shoot, I'm not first on the page. See what is on page one of Google. If you really want to look at this stuff, see what's on page one, because it changes, and the results, how they populate those results, they do give you some clues if you actually look at the page on what type of content you should be creating. And a lot of those people also ask questions are, those are blog posts that usually get snippets on page one.
And what's really interesting is that Google is so sophisticated now, as is Bing and the other search engine, or should say as are Bing and the other search engines, that they will tailor the search results to your common use of language. So what I get in search results is going to be different than what you get in search results.
Interesting. Can you go into that? Do you have any more insight into that, or can you go into that anymore?
Yeah.
Sure.
Sorry. You.
I opened my door to get some fresh air.
So
I'm not thinking the allergies are going to kill me.
Double, you might want to close that. Yeah, Carol?
Yeah.
You want to close? Why don't you close that? We'll go to commercial, right, guys? Hey, girl,
Yeah, folks, this is live. It's so fun. So part of what has really changed is that it used to be the one keyword is the right keyword for everybody. So fix an AC near me, whatever that is, that used to be right for everybody, but it's no longer right for everyone. Google and Bing and all of those platforms are learning how we communicate as individuals, which is part of the reason why Google wants you to log in, because it can collect more data on you if you're logged in. The search results that I'll get, if I were to sit side by side, if we were all to sit side by side and search for the same thing, our results would be different, because it perceives that you have a different level of knowledge than I do. So what you need to do really is collect those general conversations that are happening out in the field so that you're not keying in on that expected result, but how are people really speaking? What are they really saying? What are they really describing? I mean, if they're describing that they're looking at their thermostat and their they can't figure out how to adjust it, and they're pushing this button and the red button doesn't work. I mean, that's sort of simplistic, but that's a lot different than the temperature control button doesn't work.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so being able to understand the way people describe things is going to be key to.
Well, so what I've done this for the past several years now. Part of our debrief on every service call is that the technician fills out a little spot that says, what are some of the questions that were asked of you? The challenge that I'm running into currently, well, I have been for a little while now, is the fact that they put, what's it going to cost? Like, they'll put a generic question like that. And I'm right. This is the reason why I want to know that. I want to create these blog posts and these frequently asked questions, but I'm still getting that same, like, very generic response from the technicians. And that's the challenge that I'm running into currently.
So what's happening is the technician is listening to the client and then interpreting what that means, and then coming back and reinterpreting it again for the survey so that they can offload that as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that one of our clients has done that worked really well is to have just a conversational meeting with everyone, get all the technicians in the room and start talking about, what did you hear out there? How are people wording things? How are they approaching things? What are they most concerned about? Where do you feel the most anxiety during those conversations? It even works really well when you're talking about, I'm going to shift a little bit, but talking about hiring, finding people that really fit with your culture, having the technicians talk about what they do, who they want, the types of people they want to have, what their hobbies are, and finding that synergy. And so human synergy is what this is really about. So the conversations that you can create, the conversations that your technicians are having, if you can create a more human synergy around the blogs on your website, the way that you approach people, the wording in your ads, all of those pieces, then you're going to see more traffic and more conversions coming your way.
Absolutely.
Now, say we use this technology that we're talking about also, and mm-hmm. we say, okay, this is the question that's being asked. Said technology, help me create a post. Is that going to be a thing that's ever accepted, or is that always going to be a no-go?
So I think that is going to be accepted. And I think that we're pretty close with some of the tools that are there now, but I would also suggest that let that create your post and then go through it and put it in your own voice. And I wouldn't say this that way.
I did this. So I'm coming up with some templated emails for like onboarding, like one per week. So that way we're always in touch with clients, what's been done, stuff like that. ChatGPT helped me create the four start emails, and I went through and I'm like, okay, well, this isn't, I got to change this. You still got to edit this stuff.
Right.
I do think from a website content perspective, because if you look at most sites, service pages, location pages, they have different words in different ways, but they're not that much different. It's just part of the foundation of like organic and paid search is having pages with this stuff on it. I do think blog posts and some of those other content pieces that actually take a human element to make them better are actually going to probably be more valuable, because there will be people that throw it out there and they think they've fooled the algorithm, but that human emotion piece and the human experience piece is something. That's why Google is pushing eat. I don't know, maybe it's called eat with two E's. I think the new E was it experience, expertise.
Yeah. It's experience and expertise, but it's really something that had that human experience. The more human it is, the more you're going to get great results. Mm-hmm. And then there's a danger too, because in the old way of thinking, if my blog does really well, then I'm going to promote the heck out of that blog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we have a client, one of our original clients, and Rick, feel free to jump in on this story.
Yep.
That, you know, living in California a few years ago was the first years we had really bad fires. And so he wrote this blog about how do you take care of air in your home with these fires and what it means to your furnace and all that sort of stuff. And it was one of the first ones out there. And it was very human. I mean, it was heartfelt, this guy reaching out to people around him who are going through these things. Posted the blog. It did really well.
Yeah, it blew up.
So it blew up, basically blew up. And so the Google marketing firm that he was working with at the time was, hey, look at all this organic traffic. This is great. Let's promote this. So they promoted the Living Daylights out of this blog, which would have been great, except for fire season ended in California. Fire season started in Australia, and it ended up 80% of the traffic on the website was from Australia.
Oh, wow.
Reading these blogs about the smoke, and almost all of the traffic was heading toward these smoke blogs. The problem with that is his site started registering more as an informational publisher site than an HVAC site. So he was losing ground in his own marketplace.
Boom.
So let me jump in on this a little bit. So this was our first client that we launched the business with the idea of helping. And so we're probably about a year and a half, 2 years into that project. And along that way, we're kind of the new kids in town. So a lot of the Google folks and such, not Google employees, but the Google PPC firms and stuff, kind of thought we didn't know what we were talking about. And so I'm over here going, well, Carol is like a data scientist. I think she has a pretty good clue. Like she knows people really high up at Google and Facebook and all these other places. And we noticed that this was really killing their rankings in terms of what they provided in HVAC, plumbing, home service stuff. And so we get on the line with everybody and they go, hey, you know, we're not getting leads because your AI service is failing. And we're like, well, no, we're driving a lot of traffic, but all the traffic is going and filtering into this new system where you guys are, you know, information page, basically. And so the PPC firm at the time was pushing to like triple down the budget on the blog post. And we're like, you're going to go out of business. Like, cause they were losing like 80, 90% of their normal leads were just gone and no one could figure it out until Carol kind of keyed in on what was going on. And so finally, when they sort of listened to Carol, we shut down that blog. Carol got on the horn with some people high up in certain systems and we got them sort of reorchestrated and their leads started pouring in about 3 days later. But it was like they were going to lose significant revenues in the height of a really peak season. So it was a very nerve-wracking for those guys.
Well, that's a tough pill to swallow too, because you're saying, oh, I have all this traffic. You want me to turn that off? Are you serious?
Right. Like, they were like, what's wrong with you guys?
Well, so most clients you work with, unless they're really big or PE firm just up there, they're all local, right? Is there something that can be done with a great blog post like that to keep it more focused on that market that they're intending it for?
So you can promote the blog post, but watch the traffic, understand where it's coming from. And if you start seeing the balance of traffic getting off, then maybe roll back on the promotion of that particular blog post. What happened was we shifted from the local area to a completely different country on the other side of the hemisphere. And they weren't watching the traffic. They were just looking at the numbers.
That'd be a heck of a service call for you.
I would love to see where they're not to get nerdy, but like, where they link that blog to on other pages of their website and stuff like that. Because like a great blog post like that can do really good things for your service or location pages if you do it right. Because it has authority. But if it's not, if it's just a blog post just meant to rank on its own with no attachments, then yeah, you're going to look like a food blog. Like your information is all you are. You're not actually doing any call to actions to drive someone to call your business today.
Yep. And that was the problem. Okay. That was the problem. It was a standalone blog that they promoted.
So how me as a contractor, how do I know that this is good or bad? Like, especially if it's a contractor that's like, I see, like, I get my Google email every month that's like, you have this many clicks and this many things. And you're like, woo, it's going up. It's up 80% over last month.
You want to hear from Tersh. He's like, hey, is
this good or bad? Like, is like an 88% bounce rate good or bad? Like,
so data tells a story, and really learning the story that data tells is what's important here. And it's, you know, the impressions kind of don't matter. Clicks don't matter on their own. But what does matter is how am I seeing my revenues? So am I seeing revenues flow from the activities that are happening on the website? So if I'm up 80% in clicks and my revenue's not up 80%, then I need to go and look at the source and say, where are these clicks coming from? Because they're not what I want. Everything at the end of the day has to be tied to revenue. And so how does the story of how people get there impact the revenue?
Can I hop in on that too? So one of the things, and I think Josh, this is one of the things that we kind of connected on, is when we do work for people, we need to make sure that they're able to use our work to grow and build on what they're doing, right? And one of the things that we set out right from the outset of our company was, through our AI platform, we were not going to worry so much about you know, the normal data points like clicks or impressions or any of those things, or having even the coolest ads or any of those things. We just wanted to make sure that the main goal was met. And for most of our HVAC contractors at the time, they wanted really quality leads coming through either form fills or phone calls. And so when we first made the call, I met Carol out of the blue on this other project. She started telling me about what was happening with AI. And I said, there's some people we need to help. And so I called one of my guys and I said, hey, you have a really hard time finding quality leads. I think I found the magic bullet for you. So you need to meet with this lady. And so he told us at the time that a quality lead would cost, you know, at best $200 to $300. And I looked at Carol and I said, hey, can we beat that? And she said, I think so. And I think within about 6 weeks, we were probably 80% of that guy's traffic. And we were driving leads within a couple months around $30 to $40 a lead. And these were quality, you know, solid folks. And we teamed up with their SEO people and their website people and all those things. But we were able to bring in through the top of the funnel those types of people, not so much focused on, you know, impressions or any of those things.
No, that's so. You talk about your AI platform. Is there? I mean, obviously, there's always stuff that you can say and can't say. Is there anything you can give as far as like, what does that mean for the contractor? Like, is it just a fancy term to try to get me to do business with you, or what does it mean? I guess is what I'm trying to get to, so that way they can understand what they get.
Yeah, so what we do is we learn as much as we can about your business, and then I develop custom algorithms, which is the way that the AI searches through all of the searches across the web. What are people looking for? What are the indicators of intent and all of those things? And within a millisecond, we can get your ad in front of the right people who are searching for the right things. So we're working against a platform that connects into a couple of different platforms. One connects into 40 different exchanges. One connects into 80 different exchanges. But it's all about building the way of interpreting people's behavior in a way that is consistent with what you do and what you want to see. And then getting an ad in front of them as that behavior is displayed.
That's interesting. It's really interesting to me because that stuff is the way humans react is irrational. We'd love to say we do step one first, then step two, then step three, but if you're Tersh, she's like you start on step three And you're like, oh shit, I got to go back to one. Now I'm on 10.
I missed something, so I got to go back.
Well, so typically we have Carol do those things. So I meet the contractors and I go, hey, who are you looking for? Who's your ideal client? Tell me about that person or what that looks like. And we're not, you know, building an avatar or something. We're literally developing data points that go into an algorithm that then will feed in and we'll actually hit those people up with our partner's brand. And so we try to kind of give them an easy button on the AI stuff. And you guys did a podcast recently where you're talking to somebody about automation, and he, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was talking about how it's important to have a really solid, very well-versed human kind of helping with some of that automation and kind of guiding it like an orchestra. Right. And I think that's a little bit what we have here with Carol. Is she and our data team, you know, we have, you know, AI is a term that everyone's using all of a sudden. Right.
Yeah.
But the reality is we have a true data scientist who understands how it affects our partners and uses it to really, really build a platform for them. And, you know, because of that, we've had some really great success and nice relationships with our partners. And they've been, you know, kind enough to kind of constantly refer us business, which has been very helpful.
So, Rick, you mentioned something a few minutes ago, and that was the getting away from the thought process of the clicks and the impressions and things like that. How do we as like, that's what's been beat into my brain for 15 years. How do I get away from like, that's all you really think about?
So, you know, I think you want to think in terms of, you know, Carol was talking about revenue, and revenue is a very key point, but it's sort of like there's stages, right? You get to revenue from great salespeople who are meeting with great leads. Great leads come from a really nice design from folks like you guys, Josh, you know, solid SEO teams. People like us come in and we do what's really essentially a very well-built AI programmatic platform that we build for people. And we focus as a group on outcomes, not clicks. I mean, there's click farms, there's bots, there's all sorts of things that you do not want to pay for. And when you're paying, you know, our partner going, hey, I'm paying for the surging traffic in Australia. That's great. You know what he said to me when I called him up and I explained what was going on? He goes, hey, Rick, you might not know this. He's based in Northern California, right? He goes, I don't have techs in Australia. I'm like, I know, but you're paying significant money to actually get those clicks. And so it's not that clicks are bad, but they can't be our focus point. And part of what we've been doing is we've been working through the data to not just tell the story through one frame of reference, which might be Google Analytics, but we're actually working with multiple data sets, looking at how all traffic comes in. We, with our partners, we have actually some proprietary things that we're building that we can actually showcase exactly where your traffic's coming from, exactly what led them there. We'll even give them, you know, a journey of that client all the way through without providing any, you know, PPI, which is, or PII, I should say, which could get them in trouble. So we don't give them any personal identifying information, but we can tell them where that lead came from and go right through the trajectory. And it's usually done with a really solid, you know, team or group that we're working with, you know, everyone from the owner, the marketing director, the CSRs, the SEO person, the pay-per-click person, our team, all working together to build that solid pipeline.
Can you do the same thing with our future or potential employees, like hires?
So funny. Yeah. I was going to bring that up. So you guys were talking before we got on about how people are struggling to find workforce.
Yeah.
And this is sort of the model of the AI that we're working on, which is developing leads for our partners in, you know, AC or boilers, whatever. We're developing great leads for that. But we have this sort of same capability throughout whatever journey a person might be on. So Carol, do you want to talk about some of the ways that we've done that previously without naming?
Yeah. So we had a client that, you know, usually the HVAC techs in our area anyway, or the, you know, shiny, clean, short haircuts, polished little image. And that's not what they wanted. Their crew rides motorcycles and hunts and fishes and they like to camp and, they'd rather hang out in a garage together on a weekend working on somebody's car than, you know, doing anything else practically. So they wanted other people that were like that. We develop ad campaigns around those people, targeting those folks. They had a great training mentorship program. They got a lot of great leads into their program. They wanted to make sure that it was not just men who were applying. They wanted to have a really diverse group. They got a really diverse group because we were able to reach out to those folks with that kind of lifestyle bent and say, hey, there are opportunities for you in a group where you'll fit.
That's really interesting because, you know, hiring, I saw something, I don't know if it was on LinkedIn, they're talking about like, because, you know, now it's always worst case scenario with the media, right? Like, oh, doomsday, next 5 years, all these jobs are going to go away. And
stuff right.
Like usually ends up happening where we just create different types of jobs that do different things. We're always creating jobs. Maybe some will go away, like low level data entry type stuff. But emerging fields, like none of them talk about trades, even though the trades have always been here. Well, not always, but they've been here since the invention of plumbing and all of those things. And they're just not going away. That's why there's so much money being thrown into the trades, because the trades doesn't really go off of what the economy is doing. It stays fairly steady for the most part, and it continues to grow because people, it's getting hotter outside. AC season seems to always be busier and record revenues every single year. So it's interesting that we need more people in the trades. More than we've ever needed, and it's not going to stop. So having a way to reach the right people, not just any people, because there's always techs out there. They just may not be the people you want in your company.
Right.
So I think that's really interesting. You guys are working on that because I think that's a big need in the marketplace currently.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and to your point also, it's not as though, you know, AI or robots are going to climb up into Tersh's attic, you know, so
it probably won't step through my ceiling.
Yeah. So we got to get someone who's willing to break a hand.
That's a true story.
Yeah. Yeah. So Rick, Carol, where is the best place for somebody if they are interested in talking? And you guys, I guess to be clear, you guys do a lot of focus on paid search. I know that's a real general.
No, term. Actually, exactly. It's not.
Okay.
No. Actually, what we do is classified as behavioral.
Okay.
So it analyzes the behavior all across the entire web, not just in search. What are people reading? What's on the content of the websites people are reading? What are the things they're looking for, keying in on those websites? Where are they going and shopping? So it's external too. It's not just the internet. It's the actual world. Okay. All of those behavior pieces together create the digital footprint for the person that we're looking for. And then we can serve ads all across the available web, not just search ads. So any place that's not behind a password protected paywall, like a TikTok or that sort of thing, we can get ads in front of people. And it doesn't matter if it's a cooking blog or if it's the New York Times or playing solitaire or in-game, in-app, any of that.
You're watching TV, listen to podcasts, whatever, right? So it's, and again, we're not, I mean, I almost say we basically don't do search ads. Like, that's not really our game. So what we really do is we are an ad distribution mechanism that starts with the custom audience built by Carol and her data team.
So just to make sure that I'm envisioning this, so you guys figure out the audience, where these people are, what they do, and then based on that, you guys use that ad platform where those people would be.
Maybe I'll put it in the terms of like a customer.
Okay,
would that work, Josh? So let's say I'm in you know, Dallas right now, and it's starting to warm up, and I'm like, I don't know if my AC is going to make it through the summer, right? So as soon as I start thinking that, I start playing around on my phone on something that's connected to the internet, and I try to figure out, when do you need to replace an air conditioning unit? How, like, is there a way to just give it a little pump up, a little tune up, so I don't have to replace it? As soon as you start doing that sort of stuff, we are filtering you into our data lake, vetting you out. And then within the millisecond, if you're a qualified customer for us, let's say you have a 15-year-old system, right? Or 10-year, 10, 12-year-old system,
you're a qualified customer, we're hitting you up with ads for our client in Dallas, showing you how you could get help from that group. So it's
How would you even know their equipment's age?
There's lots of ways.
Yeah. Let's just say that my data team is very good. I don't know if we want to share all our secrets.
Don't share secrets. But like, that's the question that always pops up in my head. Like, how do I even know that this person has the right equipment for what I want to replace?
If you were going to do this manually,
you could pull all the public records for all the building permits that were required to upgrade a system.
Well, that sounds really boring.
Wow. That's exactly what I was just thinking, Josh. Like, that sounds like an amazing time.
Hell no.
Yeah. So if you had a way for all of that to be considered as part of the entire view of the ecosystem that all of your potential customers live in, wouldn't that be helpful if you didn't have to pull all that?
Yeah, very helpful. Well, what happens whenever you're working in an area that doesn't have a permits department?
Well, there are ways.
Because Candler County, getting Georgia, to any other, doesn't have a permit inspector. They have an inspector here.
So remember, Carol ran all the state websites for the entire state of California, which is like the seventh largest economy in the world at the time. So she understands how to filter through data.
There are ways.
I believe you.
Yeah.
So, but it speaks back to Tersh, like when our clients come to us, the last thing that they want is for us to drive a lead for them that has a 9-month-old system provided by their competitor. So you send a guy out, 45-minute drive kind of outside your service area. He knocks on the door. Mrs. Jones says, "Hey, I can't figure out my AC unit. And I think it's broken."
The company then goes, "Call me back.
It got turned off or something," right? And he presses a button and she tries to, make him soup or something. It's like a waste of time, right? So you don't want to be servicing someone else's brand new unit, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's super interesting. I know we've talked and it's been a little bit since we've talked. We never really got that deep into it. I'm like,
yeah.
You always try to, it's probably how the human mind works. Right? You try to compartmentalize like what somebody does.
So that was a big word, Josh.
I struggle with it. ChatGPT has been training me how to use big words. But it's one of those things like, okay, I think for me, we talk about page one of, that's what I'm focused on most days. I'm like, okay, what do they do?
Isn't there only one page now?
Yeah, it goes on forever now. It's not like page two, page three.
Technically, I'm on page one, even if I'm like 47th.
I'm going to tell all of my clients that. just keep going a little further. You'll see yourself.
No, I love everything about what we've talked about here. And Rick, Rick and Carol, we haven't talked a whole lot, but we have spoken in detail a little bit, but if it's normal, I do the exact opposite. So like, that's why I, unless I had surgery on my neck, I wear a 3-piece suit everywhere I go.
Yep.
So like, it's just, that's not the normal for our industry. And so like, I love the fact that you're kind of disrupting it by, let's get away from thinking about your impressions and stuff like that, because I feel like when we talked about this before, I feel like our industry is very antiquated. Like it's just an old industry. Like we don't change very easily. It's not a ship that we pivot very easily. So, the fact that you're coming in and changing up the mindsets and the thought processes, I love that whole approach, especially since it works.
Yeah. We just want to serve our clients. So we've had, guys come to us and say, "Hey, I'm struggling to make payroll and I used to get all kinds of leads and, Google used to work for me a certain way and now I can't quite figure out what's going wrong with it. And, my pay-per-click provider says put more money into it." And we hear all these sorts of questions and we just want to help them grow. Mm-hmm. And so we're not trying to, monopolize their marketing. We just want to find out what they need, help them grow and see what we can do to be a part of that. Right.
Well, at the end of the day, and most marketers know this, like if you're searching for AC repair, maybe you're part of like the 3% of all people looking, like you're very bottom. That's all you're, that's our paid search, like on Google. That's why paper, honestly, we don't run pay-per-click, and because it's like more of the same stuff. We're already LSA, Google Maps, organic.
Right.
3%, and you're trying to spend a lot of money to get to that 3%. And it could be crap leads like you talked about. You don't know. So it's very interesting. I love the behavioral side of things. I think I'm going to finally reply to your email. Time to talk, because there's some stuff I have questions on what we do and how we can leverage that stuff to make our content better.
Well,
there's always something to learn from this, and that's why we love having guests on that have different perspectives. And that's why we don't, like, people in, let's say, the trades, like, they wouldn't necessarily know who you guys are. That's what we love about what we do here at the podcast, is bringing people with different perspectives in that people don't know. And Tersh and I use a lot of out of the box thinking for certain things, because we talk to people outside the industry or outside of what the norm of the industry is. And that's what I think he was alluding to with the industry is like set in its ways. It's been this way forever. We're just going to keep doing it. It works kind of. So we're just going to keep doing it.
Right.
And I love the fresh approach. I love the bringing data into it. Cause everyone big companies, PE firms, they all talk data, but sometimes what does that actually mean? It's just this big bucket, and a lot of contractors' eyes gloss over and like, I don't know what that means. It's just a bunch of numbers and spreadsheets, and I don't want to look at it, right?
Well, it depends on where it came from too, Josh. Like, who provided that data to you, and what are they trying to say about that data?
Well, and then
they're trying to steal somebody else's leads and take credit for it.
Yeah. Well, and then the story behind the data is probably like the business intelligence piece of like, what does this tell me? Because there's a lot of data. There's CRM that literally will inundate you with as more data than you'll ever know what to do with. But what does it mean? What does it tell me? What actionable steps can I take?
Which I love. You said, is it making me more money? No, then it's an irrelevant.
At the end of the day, that's what most people care about. Like,
Can I give you guys one great example of that?
Yeah.
So we had a client up in Washington State, and they came to us. They were kind of a small market. And they were like, hey, do you think that your AI platform would work for us? Like, it's worked for some of your guys in the bigger markets. And we're like, well, maybe. And they started with us with kind of a smaller budget. And within a few months, they started noticing this is really working. And then we did a year review. And in the year review, the first line item I saw was that their leads went down. And I was like, oh, no, we screwed up. Their leads went down. But their closing percentage went from about 40% to about 90%. And their revenue went way up, and they ended up growing dramatically. Yeah. So they right now, that same client is closing 95% of the leads that come in.
That's wild.
So yeah, they are crushing it, which is great for morale and the company, for their techs and all that stuff. Talk about CSRs, right?
Like CSRs don't, you know how many times they get how much is Freon cost? Can you just refill my unit?
Yeah, I need 1.5 pounds of Freon.
Gas pump. Can you just top it off for me?
Yeah, that's a bad lead, right? That's the kind of lead we don't want.
We can. You know, was it like $75 a pound?
Yeah, yeah. So that client went from just a few million dollars to they'll close out around 10 this year. That's just in a couple of years with us.
That's awesome. That is really cool. So Rick and Carol, we really appreciate y'all hanging out with us. I know Josh is going to ask you the same thing. Where's the best place for people to reach out and learn more about y'all?
So I'll just throw out our company phone number. You can call or text us at 415-987-5665. You can also check out our website at marketstorm.ai. And you can also follow us on Instagram at marketstormai.
Man, I want to change my domain to .ai. I just think it's cool.
Go for it, brother.
I'm just teasing, because I see that stuff all the time now, and some of it's actual AI, some of it's like not really.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, so someone has AI, that must be cool, right? Or must be new.
Hey,
yeah,
trying to catch up. But anyways, it was great having you guys on and catching up with you guys. I learned a lot more about you that I didn't know, so I really appreciate you guys sharing that.
Well, we appreciate what you guys are doing. I love your show, and you guys are just super cool, great guys, and really sharp. So thank you.
Absolutely. If anybody's watching this or listening to this and you made it to the end, we really appreciate you hanging out with us. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to us at any time, servicebusinessmastery.com. We have a little green button at the bottom right of the screen that you can click there and record a message if you like. You can ask Josh and I some of these questions. Josh can probably answer some of them. I won't answer any of them. I'm just going to send you to Rick or Carol. So don't hesitate to reach out to anybody. They've been amazing people since I first met Rick, super responsive. So with that being said, I hope you have a wonderful and safe week. Until we talk again next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Business Mastery. Now that you are equipped with essential business advice from this impactful conversation, you are one step closer to becoming the successful owner of your dreams. If this episode has been helpful to your business journey, don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a rating, and share it with other owners as well. Visit servicebusinessmastery.com to learn more.